Two things. One, you've been on your bottoms this entire time. So if you'd like to listen to the sermon standing up to stretch your legs, you're welcome to do that. It is perhaps good practice for you, though. Thank you, John. Since a lot of Zen involves spending time on one's bottom. And depending on what you thought of that 2 or 3 minute moment of silence, you might imagine yourself into 25 minutes. Imagine yourself into 25 minutes, and then 5 minutes of walking, and then 25 minutes of sitting silently, and 5 minutes of walking, and 25 minutes of sitting silently for a whole day, or even a whole week. And then that would give you a real taste of Zen. Although this right now is also the real taste of Zen. And indeed, given how late the hour is, I'm tempted to take a time-honored Zen sermonic technique, hold up my pen, and then sit down and say, any questions? But I'll dare to presume that you'd like to hear a word or two. I'm not going to tell you anything about the history of Zen today. Suffice it to say, it is a school of Buddhism that arises in China around the 500s or so, brought there by a legendary Indian monk named Bodhidharma. It flourished over the ensuing centuries, fell into decline around the 1100s or 1200s, but at which time it thankfully was transmitted to Japan, where it had another great flowering. And from there, it came to the United States over the course of the last century, not least due in part to folk like Alan Watts, of whom Phil spoke, and D.T. Suzuki, Suzuki Roshi of the San Francisco Zen Center, and many others, Japanese and Korean and even Chinese teachers who saw the fertile soil of the West, and people who could approach this process of awakening with a truly fresh mind. I give thanks for their effort today. I, too, was turned on to Zen from Alan Watts. Drunkard though he was, may God have mercy on his soul. And in fact, reading some of the great masters and thinking what to say, I realize how utterly wrong it is for me to be saying anything at all. The great master of our school, Hakuin, from the 1700s, who helped craft this liturgy and organized many of the Zen teaching stories that our school centered on, had to be chased around the country by his disciples, who begged him to actually write a little something of his teaching down. They found him at a friend's house in the woods where he had taken, it is said, a month-long nap to avoid them. So it is not the history we will speak of, but the heart of the matter, which can be so lost in a word that is now common parlance and used in so many ways, often foolishly. Sometimes little windows have been opened to us by such books as Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance or Zen and the Art of Archery, but one today finds books on Zen and the Art of the Internet, Zen and triathlon, Zen and the Art of Mixing Records, a heavy metal blog entitled Zen and the Art of Face Punching. It is included. In most of these contexts, then, it seems Zen is a vague term that has something to do with being in the present moment, with being in the flow, with being free from thoughts and opinions in order to accept the present as it is and to be able to respond to that moment more skillfully and compassionately. And all of these things are true, but that description is not complete. First, because again and again, Zen itself proclaims that the true essence of Zen cannot be spoken of, taught, held onto, turned toward, or turned away from. Because the essence of Zen, as it were, forgive me, O ancestors, is a direct awakening to your nature and the nature of all things in an experience that is called Kensho, a deep, subjective, intuitive, often ineffable experience of now, of this. in the words attributed to Bodhidharma, the founder of Zen in China, Zen is a special transmission outside the scriptures, with no dependence on words or phrases, a direct pointing to the human mind, seeing into one's nature and attaining Buddhahood. Or as one of my teachers, Melissa Blacker, says, Zen is not a theology or a set of beliefs. Zen invites us to come into a deeper relationship with this moment, to learn how to fully participate in our life of each moment, no matter what it is or what it brings. We practice together and with the guidance of a teacher, not to learn what someone else knows, but to uncover the wisdom and aliveness that is already present within each and every one of us. There are any number of ways a person can awaken to see this heart of the matter, of our profound interconnectedness to each other, and I'll speak of those. But ultimately, this experience of insight happens spontaneously. Awakening is a glorious happenstance, a mysterious accident. Meditation does not cause enlightenment, it is said. Enlightenment is an accident. But meditation makes you accident prone. We each come to it in our own way. For some, it is a flash of illumination. For others, it is a gentle unfolding like the petals of a particularly fragrant flower. Those are Melissa's words again. And this insight into our true nature happens within all religions and none. And this awareness of our interweaving with all being is our birthright as a human being. The process is self-inquiry. Opening to the moment and seeing past the overlays that we put on top of it from our background, our training, our language, what our parents told us about ourselves, what we've been telling about ourselves, and so on. Perhaps this analogy will help. One listens to the radio, and depending on how you tune the radio, you will hear many different songs. Those songs are you, and another song is you. Or the songs are the different experiences or thoughts that you have in your own mind. Some days, it's a joyful singing. Other days, it's a horrifying dirge. What Zen would say, what Zen would ask is, what is the nature of radio itself? What is radio that does not have anything to do with any particular song? What is that field within which all of those tunes and stories arise? What it is cannot be separated from them. We're not talking about turning the radio off. We're not talking about trying to banish thought from our mind or fall asleep. But instead, what is the nature that embraces all of those things? Where every song is a piece, where form is emptiness and emptiness is form. How do you do that? As instructed before, and if you're interested in these meditation instructions I gave, you can grab one on your way out the door. The basic practice, as James Ford, one of my first teachers, says, and I've said it to you before, is sit down, shut up, and pay attention. That's it. What is going on? What is now? What is happening here? And what we find when we try to sit down and shut up and pay attention to is the first thing we are going to pay attention to is blah 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 blah. Why is that guy coughing? How long is this meditation going to last, for God's sake? Or any other thing. And so one of the disciplines is to first follow the breath. And if that is not sufficient, to count the breaths, to train the mind to stay on just one thing for a while. And boy, I'll tell you, getting to where you can count it to 10 and then to 10 again may take you the next 20 years of your life. That's okay. Eventually, perhaps, we settle into what in Zen is called shikantaza, literally just sitting. In this place, now we allow ourselves to just become aware of our experience moment to moment. And through that deceptively simple practice, we can see how that constant activity of the mind can be a barrier between us and the aliveness of each moment. It is both a path to and an expression of our basic sanity, wisdom, and compassion. And along the way, you learn to cultivate a basic friendliness or kindness with yourself as you actually are. And from that, come to realize that what you have been looking for is already here. Now, in our school, the other great discipline is koan introspection or contemplation. Koans, I'm quoting Melissa again, are poems and stories that both embody and elicit a moment of penetrating insight, and they have been collected into a number of classic collections, and Hakuin, who I spoke of earlier, was one of the main people to bring this together into a system of study and inquiry. But don't think that this is like a class where you accumulate knowledge or little bits of insight that pile together to form great insight. Because what koans will do again and again is turn you upside down on your head and say, wake up, here, now. Don't get attached to anything, not even these glorious ideas of enlightenment or generosity or meditation or even Buddha. And to illustrate three cases from the Gateless Gate, dripping, as is so often the case with Zen irony and humor. First, case 30, a monk asked Matsu, what is Buddha? And Matsu said, this very mind is Buddha. Of course, in case 33, a monk asked Matsu, what is Buddha? And Matsu answered, not mind, not Buddha. And we all love case number 21. A monk asked Yunmen, what is Buddha? And he said, dried shit on a stick. I'm quoting. However, that asking again and again, what is Buddha? What is now? What is my nature? What is in my heart? Who am I really? That question is worth asking. And the answer is not going to come from that teacher. It's going to come from you. In Zen, furthermore, though, as navel-gazing as that may sound, the wonderful thing is that we practice together. We realize we cannot uncover this wisdom alone, just as we have discovered that in our own community, that we need others around us who are us to remind us again and again to continue to practice, to continue to strive, to continue to open, to dig ever deeper, and to seek the truth relentlessly, so that we can gradually awaken to the itness, the suchness, which is that word Tathagata, the isness of all things, including everything we might judge negatively in ourselves or others, that's in there too. Indeed, Dogen, the greatest Japanese master, said those who have great realization of their delusion are Buddhas, but those who are greatly deluded about their enlightenment are normal beings. But apart from beings, there is no Buddha. Now, if one is blessed then at last to have that flash of insight where this moment of connection is known fully and clearly, not with logic, but with the whole heart and mind, to me the most beautiful thing is, where does that realization lead? Naturally, it leads to service to others. It leads to living for all of us, because all of us is the one thing. It leads to living morally and kindly. And so when a person becomes a Buddhist, though they pledge to continue to seek awakening, the main thing they do is promise to behave well, to take their refuge in Buddha and Dharma, in Sangha, in their own and your own awakened nature, in Dharma, the endless expressions of that truth, and in Sangha, all of us together trying to wake up to it. We vow to cease from evil and to do good and to save all beings, We vow to not kill, to not steal, to not lie, to not misuse sex, to not intoxicate mind or body, to not hold on to anger, to not speak of the faults of others, to not praise self while putting others down, to not be stingy with our own goodness, and to not speak poorly of things that are true and good. What an incredible mystery. We wake up to the actual nature of things, which by definition is beyond good and evil. It includes everything. But waking to it makes you good. And that really is the miracle of Zen. And it's an invitation that is made to each and every one of you. And out of that awakening, or at least that longing for awakening, out of that knowledge of our interconnectedness and our desire to serve, we take even further vows, the great vows, sometimes called the impossible vows. And lo, they are. But that doesn't mean they're not worth living by. And we're going to sing those together now. Thank you.
Was that Barry?
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to sing it once through, and then guess how many times we sing it?
Three.
You are correct. And then there will be a little instrumental thing like this in between each one. And here's the first version.
I vow to wake all the beings of the world. I vow to set endless craving to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way.
Here we go.
I vow to wake all the beings of the world. I vow to set endless craving to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha.
Infinite realms of light and dark convey the Buddha mind. Birds and trees and stars and we ourselves come forth in perfect harmony. We recite our gatha and our sutra for the many beings of the world in grateful thanks to all our many guides along the ancient way.
Please be seated.